Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. When we last talked with Dr. Peter Bielenson, director of the Sacramento County Health Department, there were no coronavirus cases in Sacramento County. The situation has changed. We're also in the midst of flu season. So joining us by phone right now is Dr. Dean Blumberg, chief of pediatric infectious diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital, a regular guest for us. And I'm looking forward to this update. Dr. Blumberg, glad to have you back on the program.
I'm glad to be back.
What can you add to our knowledge about this one case in Sacramento County?
I think what we've seen is cases not only in Sacramento, but all over the world now. And so really this virus is out there, it's being transmitted, and we're only detecting the most severe cases. And so it must be circulating and causing much more milder cases worldwide, including in California too.
I was just in the break, literally handed the latest statement from the CDC, so I'm reading it to you, not knowing whether you've seen it as well. But the Centers for Disease Control says it expects, quote, community spread of coronavirus, that there is an expectation of spread in the United States, and that disruptions to daily life could be adverse or severe. What's your reaction to that?
I'm glad. I think that's a good reality check, so I'm glad they're coming out with that statement. I expect very soon for the World Health Organization to declare that this is a pandemic, and I would like to see more scientific evidence-based responses, public health responses to this, because I think the U.S. and the world at large have mostly been driven by fear with all the border closings and extreme reactions that have occurred. And so I think this is a more acknowledgement of where we are and what we expect in the future.
What difference does it make to you and to seeing patients on a daily basis if it's declared a pandemic?
The declaration of a pandemic is really just a formality, and it helps focus the resources on this, but it doesn't really make a change in any day-to-day practice.
So there's one case of COVID-19 in Sacramento County, and officials say the person is asymptomatic, doing well, continues to remain home for the mandatory isolation period, which we've been told is 14 days, and then will be cleared by Sacramento County Public Health. Anything to add to that about just your knowledge of the incubation and process of this virus?
Yeah, so the incubation period has been described from 2 to 14 days, and that's based on very little data. So we're still waiting for better data to come out, mostly from China, because that's where 97.7% of the cases have occurred. It's possible that the incubation period is longer with other coronaviruses based on our experiences with them. That seems less likely. And then we're still not sure of the likelihood of transmission from asymptomatic cases. It's likely to be much less infectious from an asymptomatic person because there's less coughing and sneezing. The concentration of the virus is probably less, but transmission is still possible.
So in an asymptomatic person, is it being identified by maybe fever initially and then confirmed by a blood test? Is that what's happening?
I think the cases are being confirmed by swabs, nasal and oral swabs, that then the genetic material of the virus is detected by PCR testing. I don't have any details about the case in Sacramento, so I'm not sure why they were tested. But if they've had a fever, that would count as a symptom, so then they would be symptomatic. So I'm assuming if they say that they're asymptomatic, that they're not coughing, not sneezing, and that they don't have a fever.
Are you seeing patients come in with some of those basic cold symptoms, worried that maybe they have this virus? And what are you saying in a variety of conversations right now about it?
Yeah, people are very worried about this, whether they're sick or whether they're not sick. They're worried about getting it. People are wearing masks out in public. People are concerned about being in crowded places like flying on airplanes or transportation via other means like buses where they'll be crowded. So I think there's a lot of concern about that. And I think most of it has been driven by fear. I think a lot of it has been not rational. And I think our public health response has really helped create this environment of fear.
How could we be responding differently then? How could government be responding differently?
Well, I think historically what we've always said is that closing of borders is not the right thing to do. It can slow an outbreak, but it does not stop outbreaks because people still cross borders. So it's better to have them open. It's better to have them open so that people can cross borders and reach affected areas and help the affected people. And it leads to stigmatization of the people in those affected areas. And so we've seen that worldwide where people of Asian descent have been discriminated against, and people are scared and avoiding them. And in different countries, people of Asian appearance are being denied entry into certain locations. Anecdotally, we've heard of in the U.S. that Chinatowns have been avoided by people and businesses decreased. And really, this is a fear-based response. It's not evidence-based. And so we really shouldn't have these border closings and the mandatory quarantines on military bases. I'm not sure why the response has been militarized, but I think that also ups the fear factor and really creates a lot of anxiety among people.
Is quarantine an important tool, though, in an outbreak, and in what circumstances?
I think quarantine is appropriate. I think it's always appropriate for sick people to not be around other people. And so we say that every year with the cold and flu season. We say if you're sick, stay home. Don't go to school. Don't go to work. Don't expose other people. And so it is appropriate to self-quarantine. And I guess what I don't think has been explained very well is why people were quarantined, for example, in Japan on a cruise ship, which just increased their likelihood of being exposed in such a crowded location. And then the mandatory quarantines that are being done on military bases instead of the home quarantines. When we had Ebola, for example, in 2014, when we had SARS in 2002 and 2003, H1N1 in 2009, none of this mandatory quarantine was recommended by public health authorities. And so I'm not sure why they're doing it now.
Honestly, for some people thinking about travel, it's one situation to be concerned about actually picking up the virus or getting sick. It's another to consider being caught up in a quarantine to be healthy, but then for some reason put someplace for another 2 weeks while everybody becomes asymptomatic. I think it's a significant question around the world right now.
Absolutely, and it really creates anxiety about traveling. And so it's one thing for China to have their public health response when they've really borne the brunt of this disease, but then for the U.S. to have such draconian measures and then the rest of the world to follow the U.S.'s lead, you know, that creates all this anxiety, and people are rightly anxious to travel because you don't know once you've gone somewhere if you're going to be allowed to return or under what circumstances.
I'm talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg from UC Davis Children's Hospital. Let's talk about flu, because the Sacramento County Public Health Department now says 31 cases have been reported so far this season, which is higher than this time last year, and that there are two strains making people sick, influenza A and influenza B. Will you add to that information?
Yeah, could you just say the 31 cases again? Those are not 31 cases. Those are 31. Are those deaths?
No, it must be right now at this moment. But that number, I think you're right, doesn't seem correct.
Because I know for a fact there's a lot more than 31 cases in Sacramento. There's widespread activity in Sacramento and in California. We've already had nationwide, we've had 16,000 deaths, and 105 of those have been pediatric deaths. And so that's much ahead of most years that we've been tracking that. So it is a severe influenza season. It's been interesting, as all influenza seasons are, in that this one started off with influenza B, which is unusual. Usually we start off with influenza A, And then we transitioned to influenza B, so this was a little bit inverted. And right now we're seeing two-thirds of the cases are now influenza A, so we're in a big shift to a new strain of influenza. 96% of the cases of influenza A are due to H1N1, and we believe that there's a good match with the vaccine with this H1N1 strain, so the people who are vaccinated will benefit the most from this shift.
I have heard and known a number of people recently to have what I'm going to call, for the most accurate description, the throwing up kind of flu. And I don't know the difference between A and B, if one is more respiratory, one is more stomach. So we need a little science lesson here.
Okay. So influenza itself is sometimes called the flu, and this is primarily a respiratory illness, and it's really distinguished by a very sudden onset. So you know when you get sick. It's not a gradual onset. It's not like you've been feeling bad for a few days and then it gets worse. This is something like at 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon, that's when you got sick. So it's very sudden onset, high fever, muscle aches, and respiratory symptoms, so coughing, runny nose, and sneezing. In children, there tend to be more stomach issues, so you can get more vomiting and diarrhea. But in adults, that's not very common. There's also the stomach flu, which sometimes people confuse for the flu, and that's like getting norovirus, which is primarily more of a gastroenteritis. And so that's primarily vomiting and diarrhea and less respiratory symptoms.
All right. What else to know right now? And this is kind of your cue for the reminder about washing our hands and anything else to do to take precautions.
Yeah, so be kind to your friends, to your neighbors, to your coworkers, and don't go to work or school if you're sick. Don't expose other people. Cough into your sleeve. Wash your hands frequently. Use soap and water if available. If not, the alcohol-based hand gels work very well. And do that frequently. Do it frequently after touching surfaces that are commonly touched, such as gas pumps or door handles. Do it frequently before touching your face, so before eating or rubbing your eyes or your nose or anything else, and that'll help prevent transmission of influenza, coronavirus, and many other viruses.
Dr. Blumberg, thank you so much for your time today. It's an important conversation, and I know we'll be talking with you again.
Thank you.
Dr. Dean Blumberg is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. You can find much more information at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.